There is a lot of chatter about compute being the new oil because of the scarcity and because of the value of compute in the market right now. But crude oil, unless it's refined, transported, and moved and deployed into engines, is not as valuable. That refinery in AI context is really the enterprise context that companies like us build. So we are in the business of building these refineries for the industries and clients we serve. We don't produce oil, but we build refineries.
Welcome back to Stay Cognizant, where we bring you the ideas, people, and insights you need to stay cognizant of what's new and what's next in tech. Cognizant is an AI builder, helping companies bridge the gap from AI ambition to enterprise value. Today, we're going to talk about the disruption that's happening in consumer industries in the age of AI. Everyone listening has likely had your own version of this example. You open Google, describe, let's say, the type of shirt you want to buy in plain language. An AI agent browses, compares, researches, and does just about everything for you, maybe even buy it. If this is increasingly the new reality, what exactly is the retailer's role? Today, we're going to get into how AI is changing, what that looks like. In today's episode, I'm joined by Anoop Prasad. He's the Senior Vice President and Business Unit Head of Consumer Business, serving clients across retail, consumer goods, travel, and hospitality at Cognizant. Anoop works directly with some of the world's most recognized brands, helping them build AI-powered experiences that produce real, measurable outcomes. Anoop is in the room with leaders who are driving this transformation, and we're going to get into what's working, what's not, and what leaders who are ahead of the curve are doing differently. Anoop, welcome to Stay Cognizant.
Thank you. Thank you, Pamela.
Well, I want to start off by talking about one of the areas that is inside of your group, and that's retail. Retail has always been a tough business. Margins are thin. Competition is strong. And consumer tastes are always evolving, even before AI. So let's start there today. And, you know, I want to talk about AI in retail. The promise of AI in retail is something that's already here. Chatbots, recommendation engines, predictive inventory, but it feels like AI is kind of upping the ante. You know, consumers expect more from it. Companies can actually deliver more with it. What are you seeing at a macro level?
For the past couple of years, Pamela, we've been deploying a lot of platform-led Gen AI capabilities across the retail value chain. So whether it's our Store Associate Assist platform, which is powered by Microsoft Stack, for day-to-day store operations tasks for the associate in the store, or whether it's our WorkNext platform that is powered by ServiceNow for enterprise digital workplace services, or whether it's Campaign Plus for marketing operations, or voice AI, agent assist kind of stuff in customer service operations, right? Mm-hmm. So we've been deploying Gen AI-led capabilities across the entire value chain, driving the hyper-productivity agenda, enhancing the end-user experience. What has happened this year, though, with the advent of Claude Code and rapidly accelerating model capabilities, especially with model harness and such, the deployment of agentic AI in enterprise has become real.
Yep.
Right? But what's also happening is that the frontier models are catching up with each other almost every week, right? So if you look at the Pareto frontier, it's ever evolving. So what that means is intelligence is actually going to get commoditized. And, competitive advantage essentially is going to come down to figuring out where and how to deploy that intelligence. And that's where clients are going to need an AI builder. And Cognizant is actually no stranger to being a builder in retail.
Right.
So we've been actually building full stack omnichannel capabilities, since 2010 timeframe. And it accentuated during COVID when pretty much every retailer overnight needed BOPIS capabilities because stores were shut down. And so we embarked on building one of the largest digital order platform capabilities. And it ended up being Google Spanner's largest implementation, for which Google actually gave us the Retail Industry Partner of the Year award last year. You know, it runs $10 billion of commerce. The year before, AWS recognized us for a food commerce platform, which actually runs about 17 million orders a month.
Wow.
It's a headless SaaS platform, runs in 22 plus countries. It has 18 plus food delivery apps integrated into the ecosystem, for which, you know, AWS recognized us as the industry partner the year before. So we are no stranger to being a builder, and partners and the industry recognizes that.
So obviously, the builder instinct runs deep. It runs deep at Cognizant. It runs deep in retail. And I think part of the story that you were just telling is also about being able to build through uncertainty, right? And I think any of us could say that with agentic coming into the enterprise, that is certainly uncertain times. And especially for retailers, right? Because, you know, I talked at the top of this podcast about a world where agents can make decisions for consumers. They can, you know, research things for me, purchase things for me. What is the role of the retailer today? And what is the retailer competing on in a world where agents play such a big role?
So this is actually a question which, you know, in many ways separates the leaders from the rest of the pack. And to fully answer this question, you have to comprehend with two realities at the same time. The largest and the smartest retailers are actually busy agentifying the customer experience in their own path to purchase. And the leading example of this is Walmart, which is actually publicly declared its agent strategy.
Yep.
So they are actually building a super agent called Sparky for their customers and members. So if you're a Walmart Plus customer, you're already interacting with Sparky. And Sparky will let you, you know, find products, you know, summarize reviews, reorder essentials, plan, you know, events and all of that. And I'm sure there are many more features that will come out.
Yep.
And it's actually fascinating, the strategy that Walmart has adopted, which is this whole super agent strategy for different stakeholders in the ecosystem. So they have another super agent called Marty for suppliers and sellers, another one for associates and employees, another one for their developers and engineering team called YB. And I actually, on a side note, I feel like this whole super agent strategy might be something that might be an emerging trend in large enterprises, especially for critical stakeholders, you know, teams and functions. You might look at super agent as your sort of go-to-market approach there.
You heard it here first.
Right. And, you know, the other reality that retailers also have to deal with from an agentic commerce standpoint is what Google and OpenAI and, you know, Perplexity are doing, which is basically building agents for consumers like you and I to deploy on our behalf and, you know, go follow the internet to do the shopping. And retailers cannot dismiss this reality because this is an emerging space, and you have to be part of this ecosystem as well. And to participate in this ecosystem, retailers have to enable their data, their product data, their, you know, customer data, inventory, pricing, your fulfillment options, your return policy, your brand standards, all of these have to be structured and exposed to third-party agents through MCP servers.
Right.
And so what are retailers competing on? You're competing on two fronts at the same time. You have to go deep into identifying your own path to purchase for the customer experience so that the customers stay in your ecosystem, while at the same time, you know, you compete for the other reality by exposing the data in a structured fashion. And the beauty of this is that these are not two separate strategies. If you do the work for Sparky, you can actually extend that to the third-party agents that are going to come looking for you.
Right.
And the risk the retailers have is that you really can't afford to wait for full clarity to emerge. You have to build through the uncertainty for a certain future.
So you're talking about a world where AI is pervasive in the enterprise. Cognizant has done quite a bit of research that shows that while our clients and enterprises understand the potential value of AI, most are struggling to get there. So I want to talk about that with you a little bit. This, how do you get from the foundational pilots and trying things to truly enterprise grade? How do you bridge that gap? And I want to start, you know, you've talked about modernization, which we refer to as Vector One at Cognizant, you know, one of the critical elements of what it takes to build and scale AI. You've said that modernization and AI are not two separate decisions. Right. Unpack that for me.
Right. Yeah. So to unpack that, you know, let's start with, so AI is general purpose technology, very much like how electricity was. Okay. And, you know, when electricity started making its way to factories in early 1900s, a lot of factories actually just replaced the steam engine in the basement and expected the productivity unlock, which never played out until they figured out that you could place these small motors next to each of these machines and then rewire the factory based on the flow of work, which is how assembly line started. And Henry Ford really took it to a different level.
Yep.
So with AI, it's very much like that. You really cannot take a technology like that and bolt on to old processes and expect to get that unlock. You will end up with, you know, what you hear out in the market today about token maxing, right? You will not get the value. You will end up consuming tokens through that.
Right.
We talked about agentic commerce, right? I mean, let's just put this in the context of agentic commerce for retail. For retailers to really, you know, compete on both fronts, they actually have to build a semantic layer of data.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you need to make sure that you're exposing the same data, whether it's product, whether it's inventory, customer order, pricing, all of this, to the agents outside that are coming in, the third-party agents, in the same manner as you're doing it to the agents inside your ecosystem for Sparky, for example.
Right.
Right. And to do that, you can take two different approaches. You can take a use case-based approach to build that semantic layer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you do that, you're actually going to end up reworking a lot. Your 10th agent may not behave the same way as the first agent. So that's like, you know, putting the motor or replacing the steam engine in the basement with the motor without changing the layout.
Mm-hmm.
The right way to do that is actually build it with domain-centric approach.
Right.
For product and for pricing and for customer and for order and for inventory. And all of these will then be able to communicate with agents, your third-party agents, as well as your in-house agents in the same manner, and will have the same source of truth. This, however, is redesigning the factory and takes a little bit more time, and it's sort of modernization. So that's why modernization and AI is really not two separate conversations.
Right, right. So this factory floor metaphor, when you think about it in the world of AI, it's not really about AI, it's about the problem that we're solving or what we're actually building. And I think, you know, arguably, I think a lot of our clients have made that conceptual shift, but they're still struggling to get AI out of the lab, the metaphorical lab, into the hands of their workers and then ultimately into the experiences of their customers. What does it take to cross that gap?
Yeah. So there is a gap there between the narrative and the lab and maturity at the lab versus the production value. And that is really a manifestation of, you know, in my view, three different constraints that are still there in the ecosystem. And they're around technology, they're around talent and context. And let me unpack each of these for you. So from a technology perspective, you know, I feel like we are, and there is a, you know, lesson in history not too long ago in the cloud era, you know, Dockers arrived in like 2010 timeframe, and Docker solved this problem of containerization. But what it did not solve is the orchestration of containers. So for it to scale from an enterprise perspective, that problem needed to be solved. And that only got solved when Kubernetes arrived sometime like mid-2010 timeframe. And the complexity around Kubernetes was actually abstracted by the hyperscalers in a managed Kubernetes layer, managed Kubernetes service layer. That happened. I think the last one was Amazon doing it in 2018 timeframe, and Google, of course, had released Kubernetes. So Azure and Google and Amazon, all three, then had their managed Kubernetes service by 2017-18 timeframe, and cloud adoption really took off after that, and that's in the data.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, if I were to extrapolate this to the current context, we are, from an agentic AI perspective, somewhere close to that Docker phase.
Mm-hmm.
What we have is the models. Obviously, frontier models are, you know, coming out with some significant capabilities almost every month. You have the model harness now that you can leverage to deploy agents. What you don't have is that managed Kubernetes service abstraction, which will happen for agentic AI as well. There will be a managed agentic infrastructure, and somebody will solve it, whether it's, you know, the frontier model companies or the hyperscalers or somebody in the middle that solves this problem.
Yep.
That abstraction of complexity will allow companies to then do cross-model orchestration and use the right model for the right task from a performance and cost standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
All that diffusion will play out over time. What that means for a company like Cognizant is, you know, we were actually, before the managed Kubernetes service, we were moving workloads to cloud back then. We were right in that messy middle, building and working with enterprises in deploying and figuring out the integration patterns and the complexity to move workloads to cloud.
Yep.
You know, the other variable I talked about is talent. Back then, it was cloud solution architects that were needed in a hoax, and the supply was not there. We have forward deployed engineers right now, and there is not enough supply for that as well. But in the context of Cognizant, we've been doing, you know, agentic workflow implementations today.
Yeah.
Just as we were moving workloads to cloud before managed Kubernetes service arrived. So before the tech diffusion happens, before the talent diffusion happens, a company like Cognizant would have moved hundreds of workloads and would have actually, you know, deployed hundreds of agentic workflows for enterprises. And by doing that, we would have compounded our pattern library. We would have built the institutional, you know, muscle and the memory around it. We would have known the best practices around, you know, the deterministic and the probabilistic workflows, the model orchestrations and behaviors. So we would have scaled up our enterprise context in a meaningful way for the industries we serve.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a key point I want to make. There is a lot of chatter about, you know, compute being the new oil, you know, because of the scarcity and because of the value of compute in the market right now. But crude oil, unless it's refined, transported, and moved and deployed into engines, is not as valuable. That refinery in AI context is really the enterprise context that companies like us build. So we are in the business of building these refineries for the industries and clients we serve. We don't produce oil, but we build refineries.
That's a powerful metaphor, right? To think about crude oil as the computer, compute is the crude oil, and context is the refinery. That's a pretty powerful way to really visualize what we're talking about here. And, you know, you've talked about our methodology, you've talked about our position as it relates to pulling this all together, but give me a concrete example.
Right.
What does this look like when Cognizant walks into a client and we're actually building an agentic solution for them? Give me some of the, give me a field story.
Absolutely. You know, for any AI transformation to work, you have to start with the right workflow. And not every workflow is meant for agentic AI deployment. There are certain inherent characteristics that you need to look at and pick the right workflow. A few of them that come to mind is, you know, there needs to be enough volume of that workflow going through the system. There needs to be some sort of repeatable pattern.
Because that's where you get context from too, by the way.
Right. And, you know, because you need to train the agent, so there needs to be some history and some pattern based on which, it doesn't have to be the same decisions every time, but there needs to be some pattern in the decision making. The context needs to be, you know, spread out across multiple systems, tribal knowledge. There needs to be some context, you know, in business rules codified in different places. So context needs to be spread out. And lastly, there needs to be enough pain about that problem so that you can benefit from it. The inverse of that pain would be the gain that you will acquire.
Yep.
You know, once you pick the right workflow, you also need to rewire it. I talked about the whole factory analogy, right? So the rewiring is about looking at the deterministic part of the workflow for which you don't need an agent to go solve. You can automate that. You want to hand over some of the judgment calls to the AI, but at the same time, you want to design for human in the loop for high stakes judgments, you know, and so that's how you look at rewiring the workflow in those components. So we went about doing that for a large food services company called Sysco Foods, which is an $80 billion company. You know, 2 out of 3 restaurants in the country is served by them, along with a lot of institutions and schools and hospitals. So they have hundreds of thousands of customers, millions of SKUs, hundreds of thousands of deliveries that move through their
ecosystem. It's a complex business with a lot of stakeholders.
Absolutely. A lot of customer interactions that happen. And so as a result of that, they also get a lot of credit requests. About 25,000 product credit requests flow through the system in a month.
Wow.
These are for, you know, damaged product deliveries or wrong SKUs and stuff like that. And so these credit requests come from customers in all sorts of input forms. Could be an email, phone call, sometimes handwritten notes handed over to the rep. And so this has the volume, right? And these credit
requests. The repeatable process. Yes. Since, as you said, they can predict they're going to have 25,000, right?
Yes. And these get, you know, decided upon based on some validation criteria and some, you know, purchase histories the customer has and different profiles. So there's a pattern here for how you go about processing this.
Yep.
The context sits in multiple places. It's in legacy systems. It's in Salesforce. The customer data sits in Salesforce and the inventory and delivery data sits in some legacy systems. So the context is spread out. And of course, there is, you know, pain here because it took about 3 to 5 days to process a credit through the system,
right?
So this is ripe for agentic, you know, workflow automation. And so we've been able to deploy a 5-agent workflow. You know, you know, there's a triage agent, validation agent. There's a data abstract agent. Before that is a validation agent, decisioning agent. Then there is a service request agent. So there's 5 different agents that work in, you know, cohesion from an orchestration standpoint. And then about 60% of the product credit request volume flows through this agentic workflow. The other 40 does not, because the agents have not been trained for everything, because it's a planned and you know, rollout. And out of that 60%, about 1/3 of them is handled completely by agents. The other 2/3 is by human in the loop. And that is also because of certain exceptions that we want humans to step in.
Yep.
There are certain cases where the data is not complete in the service requests, or the, there's images and attachments that sometimes need validation from humans. But we've been able to compress that 3 to 5 day you know, processing time to 90 seconds in the scenario when it goes through the entire agentic workflow. Right? So what that means is you're not only compounding efficiency gains and cost savings by reducing, you know, the overall processing time, but you actually also end up compounding in many ways on the top line, because you get higher NPS, you get better customer satisfaction, lower churn. It's a high churn business if your customer is not happy. And as a result,
your employees who now aren't spending so much time on those types of tasks, right?
Absolutely. And so this is how we, you know, went about building the refinery on top of the compute that is powered by, you know, Google's Gemini in this case for Sysco Foods.
I want to shift gears and talk about travel and hospitality. It is the other, another major vertical that is in your world. And it's different from retail in that I would argue it's more emotional. You know, if you make a mistake in travel, you could lose a customer for life. I love some of the tweets I see sometimes when airlines fail, just as one example. And I know there's something, you just had a big announcement in that part of your portfolio. Tell us what you just announced.
Absolutely. It's a very exciting announcement. Just last week, we announced, you know, a 3-way press release with Anthropic, Cognizant, and Travelport. And this is the first press release for Cognizant with Anthropic and a customer.
Big deal.
And then the partnership is all about the vision to power travel technology for the AI era.
Yep.
Right? So if you look at what's happening in travel, as you said, right, consumers and business travelers alike use AI tools to plan their travel. So AI tools have a lot of rich content in the intent they express for the travel planning.
Yep.
But the travel infrastructure and the systems have not kept up over time. They were built long before. And so as a result of that, most of the participants in that economy end up leaving a lot of money on the table because they're not able to convert a lot of that rich intent into a confirmed booking.
Mm-hmm.
So from airlines to online travel agencies to travel management companies, which handle business travel, and GDSs, the global distribution systems, which is the connective tissue between all of them, they're all sort of leaving money on the table. And Travelport is one of the dominant GDS, which is operating in 165 countries.
Mm-hmm.
So this partnership is about that transformation to bridge the gap between the AI intent and the confirmed booking. So, you know, we are going to enable that human agent in the travel management company, in the TMC that handles business traveler, to offload a lot of the cognitive workload to the platform by surfacing, you know, the relevant options faster. We'll embed disruption intelligence in the platform, you know, automatic exchanges and rebookings kinds of capabilities. So in that manner, the travel agent will be able to, you know, offer a lot more personalized and empathetic experience to the business traveler. We're also going to, you know, build an MCP layer around Travelport Trip Services capability, which is the core functionality that does bookings and exchanges. And that will enable the OTAs to monetize some of that rich intent that, you know, consumers express on the online booking platforms.
Mm-hmm.
Longer term, the vision is to really transform the company into an AI travel company that offers modern travel retailing to airlines and OTAs and TMCs. And this is going to come to life by bringing together, you know, Claude Code's, you know, outstanding reasoning capabilities on large complex code base,
yeah.
Cognizant's, you know, consulting capability in retail and travel, and our engineering prowess and the platform investments we have made in NeuroSand, which is our orchestration platform. So bringing all of this together, we are going to modernize and transform the Travelport, you know, capabilities. And this is, you know, another example, a classic one of why modernization and AI is not two separate conversation.
Right.
So, you know, 6 to 9 months out, if you're business travel experience is not significantly enhanced, then you might want to call your travel desk and see what GDS they are using in the back end.
Well, this is obviously a pretty remarkable announcement.
Right.
And to your point, it kind of brings our conversation full circle.
Yeah.
And before we move to talking a little bit about the future, though, I want to ask you kind of a harder question, because I think we all know that AI has a lot of capability, but for every, you know, AI story that has a great result, there are plenty that don't.
Yeah.
What keeps you up at night about how AI is being used in the industry?
Yeah, no, with all of these, you know, AI transformations that enterprises are going to embark on, it's important to keep an eye out on the pitfalls and the challenges that could result in failure.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, just in the last few weeks, there was a public story about one such failure that happened in the restaurant context for Pizza Hut. So one of their largest franchisees actually sued the chain for damages worth $100 million for failed AI implementation.
Yep.
And they had deployed this one platform called Dragontail, which was supposed to be a super manager that would sort of drive the end-to-end orchestration for the order.
Mm-hmm.
Before Dragontail, the store manager would be able to key in, you know, in their DoorDash tablet, the order that was ready, and they would be able to pick the right driver for that order based on the driver's, you know, track record and performance so that they could guarantee on-time delivery. So they were running at 90%+ on-time delivery. what Dragontail did was it integrated the kitchen management system with the point of sale with the third-party delivery, you know, app ecosystem.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, the drivers were able to now see the orders in queue in the kitchen. So as they came up to pick up the order, they waited for the next order that was going to the same area so they could maximize their tips,
right?
It's a gig economy actor who's acting in his personal interest. Nothing wrong with that.
Right, but it's an ecosystem.
Exactly, right. So as a result, what happened was, you know, the rack time went up from 5 minutes to like 20 minutes. The on-time delivery stats plummeted from like mid-90s to something like close to 50% or so.
Yeah.
Right. And so this was not an AI failure. This was actually a system failure. So these were two different systems, Dragontail, the kitchen management system, with, you know, a gig economy marketplace coming together. And that interaction was not modeled for.
Right.
So the two systems were optimizing for their own outcome and their own performance, but the interaction was not modeled for, and that's where it failed. So having that system level thinking is critical. Now, we have a very, very thriving SaaS platform in a restaurant space. It's called Order Serve, I talked about earlier, and it runs in 22 plus countries with 18 plus food delivery apps that we integrate with, because many markets have many different food delivery, aggregation apps. And we are very mindful, and we are identifying that platform with menu operations and promotion recommendations and the like. But we are very, very mindful that we are continuously optimizing for the franchisee and the guest.
Right.
Any third-party interactions with these apps, the data that gets exposed to these third-party actors is very, very, controlled. Mm-hmm. And so you were always thinking about the system that you're optimizing for. And having that mindset is critical as you embark on complex AI transformations where you might be sort of rewiring the processes, sometime working with, participants in the ecosystem, and you have to think about the system impact all the time.
Well, we've talked about so much. You've really painted such an incredible picture of where the industry is heading, the scale of the shift that's taking place, the bold bets that are happening already. But I want to talk about something that's generating a lot of buzz in our industry right now, and that's the notion of the SaaSpocalypse, that agents are going to essentially hollow out the SaaS industry, because if you have agents, what do you need a software seat for anymore? Is the SaaSpocalypse real?
That's a, provocative narrative for sure. You know, we are in the middle of a lot of these implementations. I talked about, the Cisco example, where in that agentic workflow, a few of the agents actually make tool calls to Salesforce MCP server.
Mm-hmm.
So SaaS platforms will end up evolving to, a dual kind of a pricing construct where you will have, consumption-based pricing model for agents. And, the market is quite used to consumption-based pricing models for hyperscalers on the cloud side. And so the agent-led interactions would end up being sort of more like a consumption-based construct, while you will also need a per-seat pricing. For example, in Salesforce, if I'm doing my pipeline review, I would want to do it on the UI of the platform.
Right.
And so there would be workflows where humans would want to have that interaction.
Yep.
And the per seat pricing construct would make sense for those kinds of workflows. So I see that coexistence play out. Now, based on the platform, that mix could change. Each of these platforms may have, different kinds of mix for agent consumption versus human-led workflow interactions.
So SaaS isn't dying. It's repricing around a new consumption reality. Let's talk about the other apocalypse that's happening in the press right now, and that's the jobpocalypse. It's a very interesting time to talk about that with you because you were celebrating your 25th anniversary at Cognizant as of just 3 days ago, I believe. You started as a business analyst. Mm-hmm. And rose through the ranks. What advice do you have for, young people who are entering the job market and particularly entering the technology workforce right now?
No, absolutely. Thank you for that, Pamela. Before I share some advice for the young talent coming into the workforce, let me address this larger fear narrative around, job elimination. If you look at the AI use case, the most breakout use case right now is actually for software coding,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, yep. GitHub actually reported about 1.1 billion commits just last month. And all of last year, they had a billion commits. So that's like a 14x increase,
right?
So clearly all these AI tools like Cursor and Codex and Claude Code and many others, they're obviously generating a lot of code that is getting checked into GitHub. But what you're also seeing is, you know, if you look at Indeed's jobs data for software engineers, that is actually up by almost 10% year on year.
Yep.
And it's on a 3-year high. So the data basically tells you that this is actually Jevons' paradox in action, right? And I am actually personally a Jevons' paradox built person. You know, I remember when I started 25 years ago, back in like 2003 to 2007 timeframe, having a BlackBerry was like a status symbol. And I was still young in the workforce and I had to wait in line to get my BlackBerry, my hands on the BlackBerry. So I was anxiously waiting for a BlackBerry because, you know, I thought that would be freedom.
You made it.
Yeah. Freedom from being tethered, you know, to the desktop.
Right.
And, you know, and once I got it, right, I was like one of those Crackberries. You know, always on.
Now you're tied to the
right, right? You're always on. Of course, it evolved to a smartphone and all of that.
Yeah.
But what, you know, that example tells you is that with innovation, you get productivity and prosperity. And that's what history has shown for all of these prior innovations that we've lived through.
Yeah. They were all disruptive at one point in time before they came mass adopted and we began to understand the benefits and the value of them.
Absolutely. So I am an optimist. And with AI, there will be, you know, there will be some transition related challenges that, you know, the economy would have to work through. So on that note, my recommendation and advice to the talent coming to the workforce would be to really focus on a few things. In fact, three key things that have actually been the bedrock for my own career. One that is well spoken about, a concept, curiosity.
Yeah.
Right. And curiosity is about always learning.
Yeah.
So when I started out as a business analyst, I remember I had no business to get into COBOL code, but I had a client mentor of mine who challenged me to learn the COBOL code, learn to read the COBOL code so I could write better requirements. And I did that. I sat down with our colleagues and mainframe programmers and learned how to, you know, sort of read the code. And I was writing business requirements documents with like third degree normalized entity diagrams. And those were like, you know, so it became a classic, you know, account for Cognizant in terms of having a sort of BAs roll in through, yeah. through that account and sort of learn the art. Curiosity and same sort of skill set can be extended to today's day and age for young talent coming in. You know, they need to sort of play with the tools and in many cases, even sort of attempt use cases in their personal life. You know, you want to book a restaurant reservation through one of these platforms, go build an agent, you know, as a use case and see how it plays out. So always learning is important. Hustle. Hustle is not about just putting in the number of hours. Hustle is about being able to handle setbacks and rejections and still moving forward.
Resiliency.
And the third, in my view, which is even more important in current times, is adaptability.
And it's
about being able to reinvent yourself again and again. So when I started, you know, it used to be business analyst. It evolved into product managers and product owners. And the same thing will happen 5-10 years from now. An FDE today could be an AI engineer. You know, there'll be new jobs that will come in, LLM ops, you know, all of these types of different archetypes would evolve. So for anybody young coming in, you should be ready to adapt and reinvent yourself and, you know, maximize the opportunity presented in front of you.
It's good advice. My last question for you, for the CIOs, the tech leaders, the business leaders who are out there, what's the one thing you would tell them to do differently this Monday?
Start a build. Right? Do not wait for full clarity to emerge. You know, as we talked about earlier, you know, pick the right workflow based on some of the criteria that I outlined and start somewhere. Start the build. You know, the talent and the technology diffusion will take time. The managed Kubernetes service, you know, equivalent in the agentic context will play out at some point, but you cannot afford to wait for that. You know, the technology and infrastructure and talent diffusion in due course will happen. But if you start building now, you'll be in a much better place when all of that uncertainty gets fleshed out. So start a build.
Let's build.
Yeah.
Well, AI is bringing change to every industry. And today we've heard how the future of consumer experience in retail, travel, and hospitality will fundamentally change the way that businesses themselves will have to function. Anoop, thank you so much for joining us today. It was a great conversation. And congratulations again on 25 years. That is quite an impressive milestone.
Thank you, Pamela. It was a pleasure.
Thanks to all of you for listening. We'll be back soon with more on how Cognizant is helping organizations turn AI into enterprise value. See you next time on Stay Cognizant.